to the portfolio committee members, the minister and deputy minister, PG and the department at large. Chair, we've got from the portfolio committee, the chairperson, Honorable Njua. We've got Honorable Mdabe, Honorable Ngabane, Honorable Zuma, Honorable Yinana, Honorable Tigrem, Honorable Kado, Honorable Mkondo, Honorable Jenner. That's from the portfolio committee. And from the staff chair, we've got myself, Oshia, Sibuho, and Sibongiseni. Thank you, Chair. And I see there's Mr. Honorable Nontsele also joining now. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. DG, your team. Oh, DG is, no, no. DG is all by himself, I can see. I see DM, welcome DM, is the minister in?
Yes, Chair.
Morning, Chair.
Morning, Chairperson. Good morning, Honorable Members.
Good morning, DG.
Morning, Chair, Honorable Members. Chair, we have I have a number of people that are with me here.
Okay.
The CFO of the department, Mr. Maduna, and we have the acting UIF commissioner, Marsha Bronkhorst. We have also Mr. Sam Rotoba, who is the DDG for Public Employment Services. We have Tando Ababa, the PLO. We have Musa Z, who's the spokesperson of the department. We have Weli Letwengu, who is from my office, Karabo Mahane from the TM's office, Matapelo Matabache from my office as well. And we expect that we'll also be joined by, oh yeah, Virgil Sifield, who's here as well, and the acting COO, Nolkolo Sigaba. And the we'll also be joined by the Inspector General, Ekimola, if she is not joined yet. And of course, the spokesperson for the minister, Fadel Omali, is here as well. Thank you, Chairperson.
No, thank you very much. Thank you very much, DG. Can guests who are here introduce themselves? Guests that are here, can they please introduce themselves? So it means, who's Muhabi Matebese?
Chair, I suspect it's the DDG Corporate Services, Bahumi Matebese. I think she's joined using her son's gadget.
Okay. Mm. Okay. Thank you. All right. Mr. Sakaza, we don't have any guests.
We do, Chair. I don't know why they're not saying, because I saw the Enzo from that media house also, but I don't know why they are not saying. PMG office here.
But why are they quiet? If people don't want to tell us who they are, do they want me to take them off out and then they create a stir in the meeting that I chased them, I took them off the meeting? When they don't want to abide by the rules of the committee in terms of guests, because when we were, if we were physical, they were going to introduce themselves. I'm not taking that kind. I've got the responsibility of protecting the integrity of this committee.
Chair, I thought that we were going to tell Mr. Matebese, because he has the register there. He sees all these people he doesn't know. He must call them. Well, because in Ghana, there was a program called Bees and Leka. I thought that we would be able to say these are the people we don't know. Thank you.
Thank you, Minister. Zolani, do you have them from your side?
Yes, Chair, I can just mention what I'm seeing from my side, Chair. Can I do that?
Yes.
I've got Esther Gambe, but she's from PMG, but I thought she would just mention that from her side. I've got, as I've mentioned, also Linda Enzor. I know she's a journalist from one of these media houses. I was told at some stage that these media people are hopping in from one committee to another. So she might have just joined and left. I don't know, Chair. But her name is here. And yeah, those are the two, Chair, that I see here, except the ones that are from the department. And Streamer is, I think, somebody from Parliament broadcast. No name is just a Streamer. Those are the three, Chair. Okay, are you still here?
No, thank you very much, honorable members. We are going to start our committee, and first let's in welcoming Minister and Deputy Minister, let's appreciate that the department has agreed on rescheduling. In fact, it's because of the volume of work and the report that they were going to table that a request was made to reschedule this meeting for today, because obviously we don't want to get reports for the sake of getting reports, so that we are not able to ask questions which are issues which are to assist us to understand, because this is also a process of conducting an oversight. So we appreciate that. We are holding this meeting after two important activities in Parliament, that of the State of the Nation address and the presentation by the Minister of Finance in terms of her budget food. So we want to have an understanding that after those two mm-hmm. powerful presentation, what has affected us and how it has affected us, so that we are then able to understand. And when we prepare for our budget vote, we prepare having been exposed to the thinking and the presentation by the department. Minister, I will allow you to make a political overview, and after that, we will then hand over to the DG. Over to you, Minister. The minister
thanks, Honorable Chair and the members of the Portfolio Committee, the Deputy Minister, the DG and the senior management of the department and their entities, and ladies and gentlemen. Thanks, of course, for the opportunity, Chairperson. Let me try and flag some of the issues and provide the context before the senior management presents the details. 2020-21 has been a very difficult year. Of course, alongside this deadly and debilitating effects of the COVID-19 pandemic, the lockdown measures required to combat the spread of the infection led to a large-scale reduction in economic activity and employment. And apart from the budget cuts across the government, the Department of Employment and Labor was directly affected by the pandemic and the lockdown measures in two distinct ways. First, the immediate need to provide wage support, some 57 billion, over 4.5 million laid off workers and their families via the UIF COVID-19 test benefit payments. And the president announced in the SONA the extension of the provision until 15 March 2021. Second, we have seen the increased role of the Inspection and Enforcement Services branch in developing and enforcing lockdown and COVID-19 health and safety regulations. The department responded by appointing an additional 500 labor inspectors. You will see in the presentation, slide 25, that an almost 400% increase in the health and safety inspectors is planned in the year. By the way, we went into a citrus farm in Karin yesterday in Mpumalanga when I was in Bombay. Jefferson and members, they refused to let us in there. Maybe when I give a report one day, there will be a unanimous condemnation by the members of parliament about the behavior of some farm owners. By the way, meanwhile, the department's strategic direction and priorities remain the same. In this respect, the June 2019 SONA provide guidance, and the Department of Labor or the Department of Employment and Labor's extension, or let me say the Department of Labor's extension to include employment, has expanded its mandate beyond monitoring of the labor market regulatory framework to include employment creation and protection. And underline, not just creation and protection, as well as coordination of the employment efforts across government and its agencies. That's very important. This requires a reconfiguration of the department to address the new mandate. This process is underway, and the task now is even more urgent in order to address the unemployment effects resulting from the pandemic. The economic reconstruction and recovery plan announced towards the end of 2020 by the president significantly expanded the role of government in stimulating and supporting employment, and with it, the coordinating role of the Department of Employment and Labor. And this includes greater engagement between the social partners, the labor employers committee and government. And this is via the network, the National Economic Development and Labor Council. We are very central in that, chairing, pulling together the different principals at NetLeg. We meet almost every week, sometimes twice a week, in dealing with the issue of the implementation by all the has some responsibility. Labor has responsibility. Community also has a responsibility. When we're talking about community responsibility, for instance, you might think that they do not have how to deal with the issue of, for instance, as one example, ESCOM. What's going to be the role of community in order to mobilize their communities to start paying the rent or the rates. Business has a huge responsibility because that's where billions of resources are spent. It can't just be government during this period, which must just spend. But those are the issues we're talking about, and we are cooperating amongst ourselves. If there are differences, we've put various committees which are dealing with that. I'm talking about now the central role of our department. And linked to that is the various job summit agreements, which must also be integrated into this initiative. And maybe the DG when he reports is quite correct to talk about. We're re-looking at our structure, especially in relation to this particular area. The 2021 SONA reiterated the central role of the Presidential Youth Employment Initiative for the demographic most adversely affected by the unemployment. So the creation of the National Pathway Management Network to provide support and opportunities for training, employment and work experience to the youth is a critical initiative. This process will be coordinated by the department in partnership with the presidency and across government departments and agencies. We are zooming in, Chairperson, on the labor activation program, those training programs, looking at their quality, not just people getting tenders to train for the sake of training. We must be able to say, how are they going to be linked to the jobs as we train them? We would rather train a few and be guaranteed of placing them in the job situation rather than training in mass, and which is less qualitative. So the PMN will be funded also from the Jobs Fund, the one we're talking about of the Pathway Management Network. But all the other initiatives, we are working together with the CITES. We are working together with the different ministries, in particular, the, telecommunications and digital technologies ministry, the small businesses, and the big area where we can be able to create the jobs is in agriculture. So we are having initiatives we have started with those different departments as a start, because we see that agriculture has a potential to create a massive jobs if we do our work properly. But I need to flag that the traditional mandate of the Department of Labor is in no way diminished by the extension to include the employment. The mandate still includes the labor market regulation, collective bargaining, social security through the UIF and compensation fund, health and safety, employment equity, the supported employment enterprises, the inspections and the enforcement. And in this way, we need to draw attention to the following areas of the new legislation and policy development to be finalized this year. The Employment Equity Act Amendment Bill, which allows us to set sector targets and exclude non-compliant businesses from doing business with the state. The legislative amendments to the Compensation for Occupational Injuries and Disease Act, that's the COIDA, which includes extension of the scope of the act to cover domestic workers. The Occupational Health and Safety Amendment Bill includes the strengthening of the health and safety committees and the right of workers to refuse work in conditions perceived to be unhealthy or dangerous. I hope, Chairperson, Parliament complies. It has health and safety committees which are formed between the employer and the employee. I hope Parliament complies, because I've been fighting with also my own colleagues, the various the various ministries and the departments. We can't be the last to comply on such a basis. It doesn't need even money to put health and safety committees. I hope this committee, Chairperson of yours, which is relevant, will be asking questions from the management of, or the leadership and the management of Parliament. Do we have those committees in Parliament? So that we are seen to be exemplar. I also need to mention that the ILO Convention 190 on the elimination of all forms of violence and harassment in the world of work has been approved by Cabinet. I don't know whether it's the right time to say it's now on the route for ratification by Parliament. This convention called now 190, called the C190, I think Dr. Vassan supports the SONA and the presidential campaign to end the gender-based violence and is accompanied by the Code of Good Practice. We approved this in Cabinet maybe in December, TG, I guess. In line with the employment mandate, so the department will finalize this year the development of the national employment policy. And the sub-theme or labor migration policy, very, very complex issue, which talks to the issue of recruitment from outside the country, especially when you talk about low-skilled jobs, which do not need special skills. We are very hard at work dealing with this particular sub-theme of labor migration policy. We will be making pronouncements very soon after we've gone to the cabinet with an interministerial committee of about 13 ministers was set up by the president, which with Home Affairs we are leading. We are not far from putting this to our cabinet, and then we will also come to the parliamentary committee and go to the public. And we must expect a big debate on this one. These policies and programs are all of more urgent in the present fast-changing environment of the climate change, the energy challenges, the COVID-19 and increased unemployment, which has been heightened by the migration and the onset of the fourth industrial revolution. And in this area, we are going to be meeting a balancing act. How to ensure that we don't violate the Constitution in terms of the Bill of Rights and the right of everybody to work. The various international conventions we have signed, giving the rights to refugees, both legal and illegal. But how do we also respond to the pressure of mass unemployment of our own people at the lower levels, where even employers just deliberately prefer the foreign workers because they are cheap labor, they are ready to take anything and neglect the South African. The point I want to make is this, that the department continues to implement the strategic task of reconfiguration to include the employment mandate, which is in line with the SONA vision of employment, whilst also delivering on the traditional labor market regulatory functions. And all this, despite the budget cuts, which have now been largely factored in the strategic plans. This is not to minimize the impact on services, particularly as regards the CCMA, where increased workload is compounding the effects of the budget cuts. I think on slide 66 and 67, the DG will be talking about that. And I think when we deal with this matter of the budget, we must accept that there were cuts in all departments because of our situation as a country. So we don't have to be crying. We have to be saying, what do we do with the liquid cloth which we're having when we have to produce more? I think that's the big challenge we're facing. Thank you, Chairperson. The officials led by the DG will further provide the granular detail. I might jump at about 10:30 because I have a medical appointment. Thank you.
No, thank you very much, Honorable Minister, for your political overview. You have raised very important issues which we'll have to interact with them as the committee and as we'll be receiving this presentation. Maybe some of the things we will then have to look at them. DG, I'll hand over to you.
Thank you, Chair. I'm going to ask that the presentation be deemed thank you. Just as the presentation is being slighted, just want to pick up on issues that were raised by Minister. The SONA and the budget votes, budget speech, fundamentally they raised five things for the department. One is the economic recovery plan that the minister has alluded to. And secondly is the mass employment stimulus. Thirdly is the extension of COVID test benefits. And fourthly is the increase in the UIF contribution ceiling that was announced by the Minister of Finance. And of course, the last one is the implication of that budget speech in as far as the budget allocation is concerned. So what we've done in the presentation, Chair and the Honorable Members, is we have infused all these points in the presentation. You'll see that there are areas where the budget cuts will have a major impact, and there are areas where the budget cut will not have a major impact, and that in the strategic plan and the APP that we put together for 2021, we have factored those budget cuts, and will show where the massive impact will be in as far as the budget cuts are concerned. Next slide. That's just the vision and the vision of the department. So we'll start with the administration. Just a background that also the minister alluded to with regards to our operating environment is affected largely by what is happening and as far as COVID is concerned. So the COVID-19 lockdown affected the department in the first few months of lockdown in terms of recruitment and selection process, in that all the activities that were related to recruitment and selection were halted. And subsequent to that, we made use of the virtual systems to do recruitment and selection. And this accelerated the filling of vacancies and improved on the set targets. The department has continued the use of virtual means of conducting the recruitment and selection processes, and we have perfected that. The reduction in the budget, especially on the administration program, on the compensation of employees and goods and services, has led to the trimming down on other expenditure items under ICT. And this will affect the ICT initiatives that were planned for the new financial year, such as the integrated call center for the department and the others. The department has to reprioritize within the current baseline allocation and fund only the critical posts, and possibly remove some of the posts that are no longer funded from the establishment. This is an exercise that we will be undertaking, given the fact that mostly the budget cuts are affected in the compensation of the employees. So we need to do this exercise where we look at whether we still need this post, because some of them now have not will not be funded. But the most important thing that we do all the time when we are faced with a situation like this is that we prioritize the core function, the line function, the inspectors, the employment services practitioners, so that we don't cut on that, on those. We make sure that we still have the core of those functions. So the department has adapted to the working remotely and rotating staff to ensure social distancing and prevention of the spread of COVID in the workplace. We have adopted and implemented a working from home agreement document to enable those that can do so to work from home, but within a controlled arrangement, ensuring continuous monitoring of the work allocated to individuals. And again, given the fact that we're doing this and people are working from home, and there's extensive use of technology. Now, we also have to sit and look at if there are any redundancies as a result of this, and how we can make sure that we utilize resources effectively. The reality is that the working from home principle, especially in areas where there's no need for physical contact with clients, and it's managed properly, there's productivity and there's effectiveness, we will sit with those, because it doesn't make sense that you bring people to the office when they can do this work and they can produce desired outcomes. So you don't want to count numbers, you count productivity. On the issues of gender responsive recruitment and selection, the department is following the guides set by the GPFA on EE targets, and the department has set the target of 45% for the 2021-2022 financial year to have SMS positions occupied by women. And in the medium term, the ultimate target is 50% as set nationally. The department is also reviewing the sexual harassment policy to ensure that issues of gender-based violence and femicides are also addressed, and the process is underway to get the policy to be approved in the new financial year. Next slide. So what we see in the next slide is how the administration will do its work in terms of the 2021-2022 annual performance plan and targets. The next slide. So also in the slide is a reflection of that. The next slide. This next slide also is a reflection of the work that we're going to do, but of significance here in line with the our desire to get clean audit. We've put a target that we want to make sure that we reduce or we do away with irregular expenditure and unauthorized expenditure. And also in the next one, 7.1, we're talking about occurrences of fruitless and wasteful expenditure. We want to make sure that we do away with those. And that's why we're putting 100% reduction as a target there, because we want to demonstrate that we have zero tolerance for irregular and wasteful expenditure. Next slide. So the next slide is program two. In the recent SONA, President made the statement that, I quote, "The health and safety of our people remains our paramount concern," close quote. So the work that we do as a department, especially in as far as COVID is concerned, has been to do exactly what the president has indicated, to make sure that everybody is protected at the workplace. And that's why we've conducted the number of inspections that we have conducted. So the issue around health and safety of the nation was mentioned by the president in the context of COVID-19 pandemic. For the above reasons, the following report provides an overview of the inspections conducted from 1st of April 2020 to 31st of January 2021, mainly in response to the COVID-19 pandemic. The report focuses only on the OHS inspections undertaken during this period. The inspections were conducted in both the private sector and the public sector. Next slide. So in essence, if you look at the overview, the OHS inspections reflected here are for the period, here on for the period is 24,253 inspections, with 3,961 inspections in the public sector and 20,291 in the private sector. And the overall compliance rate for the period stood at an almost constant 56%. Next slide. So here we're showing you the breakdown of those inspections that we did in both public and private. And we have disaggregated the inspections into provinces. Next slide. Here we're showing our observations in terms of these inspections that we've done with Western Cape, Free State, and KZN, claiming 21%, 20%, and 90% of the total inspections that were done respectively. And the highest levels of compliance is in Gauteng, Eastern Cape, and Free State at 89%, 72%, and 59% respectively. The margin between Eastern Cape and Free State is significantly high. The highest non-compliance levels are in the Mpumalanga, Limpopo, and Northern Cape at 66%, 62%, and 55% respectively. Next slide. Here we're showing the general sector, which is the private sector. There were 20,291 inspections conducted, a compliance rate of 59%, and a non-compliance rate of 41%. And again, we've disaggregated that into different provinces. Next slide. Here we're showing the sectors that were inspected in the general sector and how each sector has fared. Next slide. And again, we have an observation that we're making here. We say the wholesale and retail sector has the highest percentage of inspections, claiming 42% of the inspections carried out in the private sector. The sector has a compliance rate of 56%. At least 14% of all inspections done in the private sector was done in construction, which is quite a high number of inspections and a clear example of what can be done when leaders show PA leadership. The highest compliance levels in the sectors that had significantly smaller rates of inspections. Next slide. The construction, a laggard in OHS for many years, is a clear example of what can be done at 77% compliance. Honorable members, you recall that in some of the presentations that we've made to the committee, we have always mentioned the fact that the construction sector, which showed a fatality, one fatality a week, was a problem. And if you see the level of compliance that is now improving after a number of initiatives working with the construction industry, we are now beginning to see improvements in compliance. Iron and steel continues to show a slight improvement, while the iron and steel sector has now totally lost the plot, according to the figures, which now show a 57% rate of compliance. The percentage of follow-up inspections of non-compliance is only 6% high. However, it should be borne in mind that some of the notices may still be active. A further analysis of whether we're effective in conducting follow-up inspections will be done. Next slide. Here we're showing the public sector, and again the breakdown in terms of the provinces. Next slide. Here we're showing the different departments that were inspected, level of compliance, and the whether these departments complied after follow-up inspections with them. And that's the continuation of that, public sector, including government entities. This table provides an insight into the compliance levels of the public sector departments. High numbers are recorded under general labels like municipality and community. It remains tragic that there's still very little movement over the period of almost 11 months. Lessons learned continue to evade the senior managers of these institutions, and there appears to be no will to comply with even the most basic aspects of the direction as the minister referred to on the OHS Act. The next slide. As we conclude, in as far as the inspections that we've done are concerned, for the financial year 2021-22, the Inspection and Enforcement Services branch has planned to conduct around 98,580 inspections, OHS inspections. This is an increase of about 380% compared to the previous baseline. The inspectors will continue to do inspections in the area of hotspots in coordination with the Department of Health. The OHS inspectorate now has a very broad footprint, much broader than it was last year. Again, remember that we spoke about augmenting the team that we have with the 500 inspectors, and that's why the footprint is now much broader, given that those new inspectors, after lengthy training, are now able to be sent out to do inspections. The matter of compliance levels was referred to NETLEC for the constituency to be appraised of the concerns related to the levels of compliance, because we strongly believe that when it comes to compliance with the laws, it cannot be just the department that is responsible for this. So we need to apply what is called shared leadership in as far as improving compliance is concerned. Here we're showing the performance indicators and targets for this new financial year. What is it that we're going to be doing? The next slide. And we're breaking down those targets into quarters, and again, most importantly, disaggregated them into different provinces so that we can show the contribution of each province. Next slide. And again, it's a target breakdown per legislation and showing the contribution of each province. Next slide. Yeah, we're showing the budget, the impact of budget cuts. For 2021, the branch had a budget of 676,893 million. After the adjustment, the budget was revised downwards to 613,449,000. For the 2021 financial year, the branch has been given a budget of 633,801. It might look like it's an increase from the previous budget, but if you look at the fact that for 2021, the budget was revised downwards, and the appropriated, the main appropriation was 676,893. So that the 2021 is nowhere near the appropriated or the main appropriation for 2021. So they are now sitting at 633,801. Next slide. And I think that's the point I was raising, the slide. there's a reduction equates to 9.3% over the year. The expenditure over this period, however, has been very low due to lockdown phase that left inspectors home or office bound in impacting on expenditure overall. So for 2021 financial year, we really didn't feel the budget cuts because of the fact that we had to stay at home and only the OHS inspectors were working, and traveling costs were very, very minimal. So we did not really feel the budget cuts. With the opening of the economy and the expectation that the rates of infection, of COVID infections are going to go down, so we may go to the normal way of doing things. Inspectors will have to travel to the workplaces. Things may change, and the budget cuts may have an impact on the work of the inspectors going forward. Can you next slide? The branch started off with a target of 221 inspections. That's the overall figure. And that includes all the different aspects of the work that we do. As a result of COVID-19 and the lockdown that was declared by the president to start on the midnight of 26-27 March 2020, the branch deemed it prudent to revise its target for inspections to 188,323, and that translates to a reduction of 33,283 inspections across all labor laws. This equates to a 15% reduction across the inspections to be achieved. Next slide. As I indicated earlier on, that the future reduction of targets are quite likely. Currently, the target has been reduced by 15%. Implications of that is that we will visit fewer workplaces because of that. Enforcing compliance with all the employment laws will be scaled down, exposing vulnerable workers to unscrupulous employers. Inspectors may not travel as much as they could due to future financial restrictions. And these are field workers, and field workers must be out there in the field. So their work may be affected. Advocacy and outreach campaigns may need to be scaled down, and this will negatively affect the initiatives by the Department of Employment and Labor to try and reach out to the stakeholders in terms of education and promotion of self-regulations amongst other things. Further capacitating of areas of weakness, such as the enforcement of employment equity, will be severely hampered. This will have a negative effect on the transformation agenda of the country. There are only 9 specialist EE inspectors for the whole country. Specialization of the inspectorate will not be fully realized. This includes the inability to procure uniform for the inspectors and so forth. Next slide. The next slide is public employment services. The first slide is a reflection of the work that we have put in the annual performance plan for the branch. And you will see when we go to the APP that you will see the areas that will be affected by the budget. Next slide. So the next slide is just a follow-up to what the minister spoke about, the importance of the national pathway management. The work of the Department of Employment and Labor has also evolved based on our expanded mandate. The department, through the Office of the DG and Public Employment Services Branch, is working with the presidency to actively coordinate government departments to effectively participate in the implementation of the pathway management network, as announced by the president in SONA. A memorandum of agreement has been developed and includes the president as well as the following departments: Department of Trade and Industry and Competition, Department of Public Works and Infrastructure, Department of Higher Education and Training, Department of Science and Innovation, Department of Small Business Development, Department of Women, Youth and People with Disability, and the National Youth Development Agency. These institutions have formed a working group assisting to guide the process, and we are working actively within government and with partners outside of government to maximize the opportunities that young people can access. This work includes aggregating demand and those linked to youth service, and are working with the Department of Higher Education and others to identify and address gaps. So the importance of the National Pathway Management is that it provides young people with a much more broader access to the, to the employment opportunities, as it extends their reach. We decided that because government cannot go alone in terms of placing young people in employment, we must partner with the private networks because they have a much more better reach, and they have close contacts with the private sector, and some of these networks already have agreements with the private companies. So it will be important that these young people, whether they are in the employment services system or any network, any private network, they are able to access opportunities across the networks. Even for the employment services system, we have employers who come and report opportunities and register those opportunities. So it's important that when young people move, they have access to all the networks. Next slide. The department is also playing a key role in the economic reconstruction and recovery plan, including through supporting the coordination of government departments working network with respect to the plan. The minister spoke about this at length. In addition to this, the budget was augmented by 11 billion. This budget that we're talking about is a budget that the president announced to augment the 12 billion that was given by the National Treasury to support the mass employment stimulus program. So that 11 billion will go a long way in ensuring that the work that has already been started is sustained, because what we don't want is young people getting into these programs and in the following year we stop. We want to make sure that there's sustainability and these programs do continue. This allocation will both sustain the work of the presidential employment stimulus, ensure that we're able to work with the presidency and other partners inside and out of government under the auspices of the Presidential Youth Employment Initiative. Next slide. So this slide shows the work that will be done by the public employment services, the number of work seekers registered on the ESA per year. You see that in 2020, we set a target of 750,000. That target has been increased to 800,000. So is the target on the number of employment opportunities registered on the ESA system per year. That has gone up from 50,000 to 100,000. The number of registered work seekers provided to employment counseling per year also has increased by 10,000, from 220,000 to 30,000. Number of registered employment opportunities filled by registered work seekers per year has also gone up from 15,000 to 50,000. Next slide. The number of partnership agreements concluded with various stakeholders has also gone up from 15 to 20. And for 2021, on the number of policies developed and approved, we have one, and the minister has alluded to that policy. Next slide. Here is a breakdown of those targets that I spoke about in the previous slide. Thank you. Next slide. Here again is a disaggregation of that those targets into quarterly targets, and then allocation to the different provinces. Next slide. Again, this is the same thing that we've done, but here on the number of employment opportunities registered, here we're showing the contribution of each province to the annual target on a quarterly basis. Next slide. Here is the number of registered work seekers, and again, showing the contribution of each province to the annual target and broken down into quarterly targets. Next slide. Here is also similar exercise where here we've broken down the number of registered employment opportunities filled by registered work seekers per year. This is what we want to achieve. We've broken that down to quarterly targets and also showing the contribution of each province to the bigger targets. Next slide. So this is the budget of the branch for 2020-21. It's a bit faint. I hope that honorable members can see this. The total budget for 2021 for the Public Employment Services branch is 157 million. And in the previous financial year, that budget was 643,467 million. And it was revised down to 588,664. And now it's gone a little bit up. If you look at that revised figure, it has now gone up to 610,157. Next slide. This next slide reflects the work that will be done by the supported employment enterprises. You'll see we're making quite a number of bold, set quite a number of bold targets as we go along. The total employment, to employ new additional persons with disabilities by 2025. We're saying here for 2021, we want to make sure that we employ 25 people with disabilities by the 31st of March. And we've set targets for the next financial years. Next slide. Here we want to increase revenue to 40% by 2025. And for 2021, we want to realize a 5% annual increase. And again, whatever we said in the previous slides depends on whether we'll achieve the 5% annual increase, because for us to be able to employ the 25 that we're talking about, we rely heavily on whether these factories are generating enough revenue so that we're able to make the necessary appointments, even though they're getting an allocation from the department. This one is we want to increase SCE's market share. And again, for us to realize what we set as a target in the previous slide of 5% increase in sales, we need to make sure that we also improve our market share. And we are known for what we are doing, and we have support. We're getting contracts so that we're able to increase our revenue. So for 2021, with 5 MOUs have been entered into with key customers. Or we want to make sure that we enter into 5 MOUs with key customers by the end of March 2022. Next slide. So here, this is just the breakdown of the targets per quarter. Next slide. and that's the budget allocation. For 2021, we were, the SCE was allocated 153 million as a grant, and for 2021-22, it's slightly, it has slightly been increased to 468 million. Below is just the spread in terms of the how they're going to spend the money. Next slide. The key risk and mitigation strategies, as I indicated, that the success or the achievement of the target of adding more people or more opportunities for people with disabilities in these factories depends on a number of things. They increase sales by 5%. So if you have low customer base, there's no way that you'll be able to achieve that objective of providing additional job opportunities for people with disabilities. So if we increase sales, improve marketing, develop new innovative products, secure 5 new customer agreements, we're pretty sure that we will achieve that. Next slide. The next slide is on labor market policy. These are their objectives. I'm not going to go through that. Next slide. The next slide. These are programs that fall under the branch. The next slide. These are sub-programs. And of course, National Economic Development and Labor Council falls under the branch. CCMA falls under this branch. The implication of the State of the Nation address, as far as that is concerned, violence in the workplace was mentioned by the president, and the minister already alluded to the fact that the ratification of the ILO convention, which deals with violence and sexual harassment in the workplace, has been approved by cabinet. And this will find its passage to Parliament for ratification. Implication of the budget vote, as I indicated, for this branch, there are none since the strategy plan developed already caters for the budget reduction envisaged over the medium-term strategy framework period. Next slide. This is just a reflection of what they will be doing, their targets, and how those targets are spread, over the 4 quarters of the year. Next slide. Same thing here. Next slide. And again, these are the targets that they've set. Next slide. Next slide. The same thing here. Okay, next slide. On SONA and the budget implication, we've already indicated that the announcement of the strategic plan development already caters for the budget reduction and space over the medium-term strategic framework period. The next slide. But the budget cuts will surely, as we have indicated, have an impact on the CCMA. So the biggest impact will be on the caseload, vulnerable workers whose only recourse would be through the CCMA may not be serviced. Dispute prevention initiatives will severely be impacted. The budget cuts will have a serious impact on resource mobilization. And the number of part-time commissioners may be reduced drastically. The manner in which services are provided would have to be adapted, more online dispute resolution processes. The consultation on the economic reconstruction and recovery strategy with the social partners is located within NEDLAC. as mentioned by the minister, on specific deliverables for which has been established, NetNet will provide a monitoring mechanism. So the new way of work has necessitated that the organization look at new forms of delivering the services. It provides more online discussions as opposed to residency-based meetings. This implies less traveling and reduced ancillary costs. So as far as NetNet is concerned, the budget cuts will have no significant impact. Chair, I would like Welile to flight the slide on the unemployment insurance fund. Okay, next slide, Welile. Here, earlier on, Chair, we spoke about the fact that the President announced the extension of COVID test benefits. Next slide. So here, the announcement by the President meant that because COVID test benefit ended on the 15th of October 2020. With the extension, it means that we're starting from the 16th of October to the 15th of March 2021. So we're calling this phase two, and this phase two will cover the following areas: employees that are on temporary layoff or reduced work time within those sectors that have not been able to operate due to regulatory restrictions as per directive issued. Employees in all sectors that are still in isolation and are quarantined, those that are age of 60 and above with comorbidities who cannot reasonably be accommodated at work. The identification of sectors to be included was extracted from the key directives issued by the Minister of COPTA that banned or impacted on operations. Next slide. So progress with phase two implementation. Agreement was reached at NetLab to review the listed businesses and business activities to also cover direct and indirect activities of businesses, also end-to-end value chain. Especially this, you'll see in the tourism and hospitality sector, where the downstream of this of the sector has been largely affected. So it's important that we don't look at the one area, we look at the entire value chain. The UIF will use the standard industry code stick to categorize businesses into various levels to control the claims from only those that qualify and exclude those not to be considered for phase two. The SIC can be verified against RARS data to ensure the integrity of claims. Next slide. These are just the sectors that we spoke about that are part of the SIC. Next slide. This is an example of SIC breakdown. Next slide. If we look at the support for non-covered sectors, recognition that most businesses remain constricted due to economic impact of COVID-19, need to provide relief to affected employees not covered under the test extension, but balance the liquidity of the UIF, include the deviation to Section 12.1b in the test extension directive to enable employees to apply for a temporary layoff but to receive full rent value for their credits, utilizing the principle that benefits plus earnings in period cannot be more than normal salary rather than benefit value. So basically what that says is that Section 12.1b says that if the employer is going to top up your salary or is going to top up whatever UIF would have given you, that top up must not exceed the total amount of the benefit. So just like we did during the first phase of COVID tests, where we decided that in order to be fair and put money in the hands of the workers, we will deviate from that Section 12 and allow employers to top up whatever the benefit would have been to make sure that there's more money in the hands of the workers. So we're applying the same principle here, where we're saying we are waiving the requirements of Section 12(1)(b). And the purpose of that is to make sure that there's more money in the hands of the workers. This will provide financial relief without prejudicing employees. Here we're talking about minimal rents for loss of credit and the risk to UIF, where we're limiting the future liability. The next slide. So the UIF contribution, as far as COVID tests is concerned, since 27 March 2020, we've contributed 58.3 billion to the economy. And we do want to make this point, Chair and the honorable members, boldly, that if you look at the figures that were released recently by the Statistics South Africa on the quarterly labor force survey, where the unemployment has gone up, we of the view that, and is supported by a number of economists here, that had it not been for this injection into the economy, the situation would have been much more dire. So this 58.3 billion that was injected into the economy actually prevented a number of job losses that would have been realized and kept, you know, people in employment. So that amount of money, 58.3 billion, was paid to workers, and the payments made were 13.6 million payments that were made to workers, and just over 1.1 million employers applied for the relief. We estimate that with the extension, we will have to spend 15.8 billion, and that's a further 15.8 billion injection to the economy. And that takes us way beyond the initial 60 billion that we thought we would spend. Initially we said 40, and when we extended it, we said it will at least reach 60 billion, and now we just over 70 billion. We will be over 70 billion on the 15th of March. The above excludes statutory benefits of 14.9 billion paid. We haven't stopped paying benefits, your ordinary benefits, we continue to pay them. So this is the phase two application dates. So from the 16th of October to the 31st of December, we've already opened on the 1st of March for applications. For the 1st of January to 15th of March, we will issue an advisory note on the opening for the applications. Next slide. Progress on direction, the minister signed on the 26th of February the direction which gives effect to the report that I've just given. It was published in the government gazette on the 3rd of March 2021. In the budget speech, the Minister of Finance spoke up or mentioned the increase in contribution ceiling from 14,872 to 17,711.56. What this means is that The UIF has always been saying that the ceiling, the payment ceiling for the contribution, for the benefits was sitting at 17,512, if my memory serves me well. Now, which means that UIF was paying benefits at a much more higher ceiling than the contribution ceiling. So the contribution ceiling was sitting at 14,872, and we've asked National Treasury to increase the ceiling because the UIF Contributions Act is a money bill, and therefore it's the responsibility of the National Treasury. So they have acceded to that, and that's why there's an increase in the contributions ceiling, and that sort of balances now the benefits paid to the contribution ceiling. The benefit ceiling to the contribution ceiling. So what it means is that if you're earning 20,000 or more, we will pay you at the 17,711.56 as a ceiling. So that's basically what it means. So the increase from the contribution ceiling is just over 500. If you look at the benefits ceiling. And this is awaiting publication in the Government Gazette. This last slide is just the sectors as per the extension. Next slide, and that's the continuation of that. Chair, I would like Welile to also put fly to the slide on the budget allocation. And that will round off our presentation. Whilst we're still searching for the chair, I can talk to it briefly. What we want to show, or what the slide will be showing, is that we had an indicative budget of just over 3.8 billion. And with the adjustments, budget cuts, we're sitting with a final budget of 3.5 billion. Now, which means that the budget cut effectively from our budget is 351,439,000, and that's why we're now left with 3.5. And if you look at the reduction across the medium term, we're looking at just over 1.1 billion, which has been affected as a baseline reduction for the medium term. Next slide. Here we're showing how the entities and how the budget reductions will affect the different entities and the certain spending pressures within the organization. For instance, ARLAC, which is the African Regional Labour Council, we pay contributions to this entity. For 2021, we're sitting at 57. For 2021, we will be paying 57 million, and for 2022, we will be paying 75. CCMA, their budget is 90,775,000, and of course, it goes up as we move across the medium term. The compensation of employees The reduction is 213,262,000. So CCMA budget was cut by 90 million, and Harlack by 57 billion. The CF COIDA claims, because we're responsible for administering COIDA claims for the public service. So that budget was cut by 744 million. The designated groups, 167 million donations, we've reduced them by 2 million. Goods and services general reduced by 24 million. Catering by 355,000. Computer services by 7,267,000. Household goods, 16,000. The ILO has also been cut. And so in total, that's what the that 351 comes from. And that's how it was affected in the budget of the department. You can see, for instance, NEDLAC, it's 4,757,000. Productivity South Africa is 357,000. Strengthening Civil Society Fund is 995,000. And FEE, their allocation has gone down by 6,395,000. So that's broadly where that 351, has been spread, so that it doesn't come from one single source. Next slide. Thank you very much, Chair. That's the end of the presentation.
Thank you very much, DG. And I'm of the understanding that as members, we received this presentation yesterday. At least we will be talking and asking questions on issues that we have gone through them. What I will do now, I will then ask for if are there any members you want to questions, clarities, comments?
Michael Bagram.
Honorable Baker.
Cardo.
Bye-bye, Nana.
Honorable Cardo.
Honorable
Inana.
Kosi Mkhonto.
Oh, I see this. Mkhonto. I see Honorable Mdabe. Okay. Yeah, for now, Honorable Baker.
Thank you, Chair. I really appreciate it. And thank you to the Minister and the DG for a report. I do appreciate that. It's put us in the picture, at least. I've got a couple of questions first to the Minister. And I see that the minister has referred to the 500 inspectors, the additional inspectors now because of COVID and the times have changed. But these inspectors were appointed before COVID, before we even knew about COVID. So I'm not sure what the minister is talking about, but maybe there's another 500 inspectors that he's talking about. I hear what the minister says about the farm that refused to let them in. I hope they're going to take action and we'll get some report back to our committee. But what I do want to say is that the minister explains that the mandate of the department is now to include employment creation. Well, we've seen very little of it, but maybe the minister should be looking at the harsh regulatory authority as put in by the Labor Ministry. Most employers we speak to today, and you can go across the board, especially to small employers, with harsh regulations, they are loath to actually create any employment. They'd rather buy machinery, they'd computerize, et cetera. So maybe the department, if they really want to create jobs, must have a look at their regulatory authority first. And maybe the minister can maybe tell us a bit about it. I know that the minister said that the NEDLAC is meeting almost twice a week at certain stages. Why is it that when NEDLAC comes to decisions and recommendations, often the department and the government just don't go with that and it's never actually implemented in Parliament? I know that the Job Summit looked very carefully and has for the last 5 years looked carefully at youth unemployment, But we know that from COSATU's figures, they're telling us that youth unemployment is over 65%. In other words, we're getting worse every year, regardless of what the job summits tell us and regardless of the billions promised to train youth. Also, the minister said that agriculture is the area where you need a lot of growth, and it's obviously easy growth over there because you don't need specialized individuals. But then he implements a massive minimum wage increase, which has led to a whole lot more retrenchments. We've seen all the reports. Minister, also disabled. We're still sitting at about 1% in the country of disabled, when in fact they're almost 6% in society, or if not more, of the disabled. And I know that in the fourth parliament, the minister offered us there that it would definitely be 3%. We're still sitting at 1%. I understand that we've got problems with finances and whatever, but I know the DG has said that we got fewer and fewer inspectors and we won't be able to travel. It's a real problem. I mean, it's like the safety belt laws. If there are no traffic cops on the highway, then people won't feel like wearing their safety belts. It's as simple as that. So we can have a fancy legislation, but no enforcement is a real problem. And especially we're seeing that for the CCMA today. People are dismissing almost ad hoc, willy-nilly, knowing full well that the CCMA now is dysfunctional because you've cut their budget, which leads me to another question. Why has the CCMA employed a 2IC? Just recently, I think 2 weeks ago, employed a very high-paid employee there, and they're using that money instead of bringing CCMA commissioners back. It's a real problem. National employment policy for special skills. It's still a nightmare bringing someone into South Africa who has a special skill who would then create employment for other South Africans. And yet we're seeing that the nightmare of getting permits for special skills is getting worse and worse every month. Okay. The other thing is, I'm taking too much time. Thank you. I'll go in the second round. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Bakram. Honourable Kado.
Thank you, Chair. I've got two questions. One for the Minister, if he's still on the call. He mentioned the labour migration policy would soon be serving before Cabinet. I know we've heard lots of noises in the past, including from the Finance Minister, that the government is opposed to foreign nationals being employed in fairly low skill jobs in sectors like the restaurant industry, in transport. And I wanted to know from the minister whether the labour migration policy will introduce quotas for foreign nationals in low-skilled jobs. My second question is about the financial sustainability of the UIF. You've paid out 58.3 billion rand in TERS so far, and you expect that the extension of the benefits until the middle of March will cost you another 15.8 billion rand. So that takes you up to almost 75 billion rand, nearly double the amount initially anticipated. Is this going to affect the UIF's ability to pay out the usual non-TERS benefits? And the reason I ask this is because certainly the minister will recall that last year I asked him about the UIF's long-term sustainability, and he told me that the UIF's actuaries had presented the department with four scenarios, one where the unemployment rate peaks at around 41% and TERS costs 48 billion rand. The second scenario with unemployment also at 41%, the TERS benefit costing 68 billion rand. The third scenario with unemployment at 53%, TERS costing 48 billion rand. And the fourth scenario with unemployment at 53% and TERS costing 68 billion rand. And what was said at the time is that in the first two scenarios, the UIF would become financially unsound, but would still be able to pay claims. In the third scenario, the UIF wouldn't be able to pay all claims on time, and it would have to implement measures much like the Road Accident Fund does to prioritize payments. And in the fourth scenario, the fund would be in dire straits and would have to reduce benefits. So my question is, what scenario are we looking at now that the overall amount in terms of TERS is heading towards 75 billion rand, and we know that the expanded definition of unemployment, according to the latest quarterly labor force survey, is around 42%, if I recall correctly. What does this mean for the UIF's long-term financial sustainability? And perhaps you can give us an indication of exactly how much money the UIF has in reserve. Perhaps you could enlighten us about the exact amounts at play. Thank you, Chair. I'm done.
Thank you. Thank you. Sorry for that. Honorable Yinana.
Chairperson, thank you very much for the opportunity given, and also thanks in the presentation by both the minister and the DG. Chairperson, I have a question for the minister. While agreeing with the minister about the negative implications of the budget cuts and the COVID-19 pandemic, my question is that in terms of reaction and response to those issues, what are the tangible recovery plans for both economy and employment creation? And on the issue of employment, we are having a lot of people that are coming across from all over the world, in particular from the African continent, who are working in the job sectors where South Africans have been working, whether it's restaurant, whether it's petrol attendants, catering, hotels, and so on. And the number of people that are serving you when you get to those restaurants, you'll find that 90% of those people are not South African. Isn't that contributing negatively to the unemployment rate that is ever increasing in our country? And how do we arrest that? Minister, you talked about that the committee must take the initiative of making sure that they are health sector committees, even in the department. But our responsibility as the committee is to hold the government executive accountable. You as the ministry, what is it that you are doing in terms of facilitating and making sure that the parliament does help those health committees? To the DG, on page 5 on the one of presentation, DG, you talked about the department prioritizing the bill allocation of jobs, and only critical posts are going to be funded. Those that are not critical are going to be rendered redundant. Now, my question is, which are those posts that have been there who are now going to be termed as redundant? And in terms of critical posts that are available, what are the posts that we are talking about? Because their understanding is that the post for the first thing that they are being created and made available, advertised, people went through all the processes. They are critical. Now, if there is going to be a change of mind because of whatever factors from outside, what are the main reasons and what are those books that we are talking about? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Nkonto.
Thanks very much, Chair. Honorable members, the minister, the DG, and his team. Chair, I will have comments and questions. My first comment is based on what the minister has said, that he was refused entry to one of the funds in Bombela. Chair, that is what we experience, and I think is what is being experienced by the labor inspectors almost on daily basis. And in the agricultural sector, I think government has to deal with these agricultural unions because they are the ones that are encouraging farmers to undermine a government intervention in whatever illegal activities that they are busy with. With the labor migration policy, I think that is overdue, long overdue. Minister will welcome that, so that we South Africans are the responsibility to make sure that that is regulated. It's not in the hands of the public. but government must take a responsibility. I think it, I wish you introduce it as soon as possible. Chair, first question will be on the reduced budget of the CCMA. When looking at the COVID-19 activities, I think unlike all other entities, in what is happening in our labor market, I don't think that it's a wise step to reduce the budget of the CCMA. I know maybe there are no funds that can be taken from another entity or from another program to CCMA, but really people have started to complain about them not being able to access a CCMA, and the COVID-19 period has made people to seek a CCMA more than before. The inspectors, the labor inspectors, Chairperson, their performance according to the DG's presentation is quite satisfactory, but we really have to look at some sectors, specifically the mining sector. You know what happened at Lily Mine some years ago is an embarrassment to this department and this government. I don't know, maybe they are monitoring or maybe paying focus on some of the sectors, specifically the mining sector, is exposing us big time. There is a 11 billion that the DG talked about on broader employment work, the youth employment initiative. I did not understand exactly what is that 11 billion for. And the reduction of the commissioners in the CCMA, Chairperson, I think that one has to be looked at very carefully. Thanks very much, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Nkonto. Honourable Ngabe. We can't hear you. Honourable Ngabe.
We are not here.
Honourable Ngabe. We are not here. We can't hear you.
Okay.
Are you fine now?
Yes, I'm here, Chair. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you now.
Thank you very much. Good morning to you, the Minister and Deputy Minister, Honourable Members and the DG and staff. the Labour Migration Policy, Minister, it's most welcome, and we highly appreciate that. Hopefully, the relevant committees would then be given an opportunity to deal with that, including us, if possible. My question would be to the presentation in relation to the staff that is working at home. What has been the impact, if ever there has been an analysis or an evaluation on centers to the number of as from the March when the lockdown was introduced? Has there been a study being done as to whether the service delivery has not been negatively affected? If it has, what strategy has been put in place to deal with that? on slide 31, is there a reconciled report between the inspectorate and CCMA on the impact of the non-compliance on the reduction of the inspection due to lockdown? On slide 32, has there been a report on the impact on vulnerable workers being exposed to unscrupulous employers due to as well the non-compliance of the non-inspection that is being done? There are only 9 specialist inspectors on employment equity in the whole country. What is the plan to increase the number?
Can honourable members please mute? Sorry, honourable
members.
Are you done?
On slide 49, Chair, under the budget of the supported employment services, there is a target of 5% increase on the turnover, so as to make sure that at least they employ 25 people with disabilities. However, the challenge might be on the reduction on the budget, especially for marketing. It started at 3 point something million, and now in 2021-22, it's going to be 450. Would that not affect their target? If not, what would then be the plan to deal with that? The last one, Chair, the online services for CCMA that is being introduced, how is it going to affect vulnerable workers who do not have access to internet services and their illiteracy level? Thanks, Chair.
Honourable Mugabe, I see Honourable Ngcobo. We welcome you, sir. I'm sure you logged in a bit late, but we are welcoming you in this committee. He is the member that we're told that is going to replace Honourable Ngwezi from the IFP. So you will pardon him. It will be his maiden, what should I say, speech or questions in this employment and labour. Welcome, Honourable Ngcobo. I hand over to you.
Thank you very much. Honourable Chairperson, and thank you for the warm welcome. Chairperson, as you are saying, it's my first time. I just wanted to make sure that I observe and learn what is happening here. However, I just wanted to underscore only one point, and it's a bit general, which was raised by one of the members. The South Africans have been decimated by the pandemic, COVID-19. But this came at the time when already we had problems in this country of our people, our people in this country not having work. Whereas if you look around in a number of places, we have people whom are in this country who are foreign, excuse me to use the word, I don't mean anything bad. Foreign to this country, they are being given work which do not need skills. Work which the South Africans themselves do have skills on. Maybe one might expect something to be done and done urgently, because the situation is going to be worse than what we have seen, what we have witnessed, Honorable Chairperson, people beginning to rise now, and we've got more of this violence, people feeling that they are not being looked after. Instead, Africa is looking after the foreigners, in spite of the fact that the work that they do is not necessarily the work that needs skills. I just wanted to underscore that point, Chairperson, whilst I am observing, and I hope members will bear with me. I may still be learning for quite maybe a couple of meetings. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Rav. No, feel free. I think it's quite important that if you are coming for the first time, you really learn and understand. But as a veteran, I'm confident that you're going to catch up quicker and sooner than you thought. Otherwise, you are at home, feel at home. Minister, DG.
By the way, ma'am, can I crave your indulgence?
Yes, sir. Yes.
By the way, ma'am, I come from the union world. I served as a president of the labor organization, as president for 18 years. And I have been serving in the education sector. As I'm here now, I come from the portfolio committee of higher education, science and innovation. I decided to leave there because I had too much clashes. I'm remaining with this committee and the basic committee. I'm sorry about the stories that you may not be needing, but I was I just felt it's necessary.
No, that is important. Without South tracking, I think that is important. So that we understand the skills and the expertise that honourable members are having. So you are. This is not a new area for you. Yes, some of us are former trade unionists, so feel at home. It's fine. And exactly, you are a trade unionist, because that's what Shostuart and members have always been taught, that first listen and learn. Thank you very much, Babu Ngobo. Thank you very much. DG, then after that, we'll allow the minister to respond on issues that have been raised. Questions, clarity?
I request Chairperson
to start
because okay. I'd indicated that I might have to jump. Let me start with the easiest one. Honorable Yenana, you raised two issues and you said we must ensure that you're quoting me, that health and safety committees are there. And what are we doing as the department? It's when we're doing our inspection that we realized that some are not taking this issue seriously. And we've been doing something about it. And we've been able to raise it with the various authorities in the various platforms that we expect government to be exemplary. And we're becoming very heavy with them. I just want, and I raised the example of parliament because you as people are doing your oversight in your own workplace. It might not even need a person from outside as part of following that the laws are implemented. You will start with your immediate environment. You do not even need money to do that. You will just walk in your particular office and find out and say what is happening in relation to 123. Because I think members of parliament have a right beyond us as a department to do their own site visit. On this one, you will do the site visit just next in your own workplace. That's the context of that. And that would be complementary to what we are also doing. I think that's the issue. I'm not putting a responsibility to you, but I'm saying we all have that particular responsibility to complement us, even on these things which we think that they are easy wins. And you also raised the issue of what are the tangible recovery plans for the economy? I don't want to say much on this, Honorable Hilan, except to refer you to the economic recovery document. President Cyril Ramaphosa, when he convened a forum for economic recovery, that was in August last year, invited all social partners who presented their plans. And I'm also trying to answer some question which was also asked by Honorable Baker. All parties presented their plans and there was agreement on how those are processed, how those where there is agreement, they would be integrated into the big plan of government. So the action plan which we're talking about, which I've referred you to as the economic recovery plan, which has become a program of government, has been developed through detailed consultation between all social partners. And it set out both collective and individual commitments, which were made in respect of a number of areas, and which are made to build, I mean, what we call build investor and consumer and public confidence in the short term. Because I think one of the things which is destroying us is to speak, sending different messages. Whilst people, some of them are profiting in South Africa, but they continue to talk ill of the very country they are profiting, instead of talking about how do we send one message that we are faced with this problem collectively and how do we deal with it collectively. That is why we decided to come up in the action plan. We set out firstly the immediate and the short-term measures, which we thought that they were easy wins. And we said the criteria should be how to build confidence, how to kickstart the economy, how to deepen industrialization through localization and deliver those continuing quick wins, how do we continue to provide relief to mitigate the impact of the COVID-19 pandemic. But we said, as a second stage, the social partners will be discussing simultaneously and implement later the medium and the longer term structural reforms and other programs which are needed. And they are all identified in that document. So the economic recovery action plan is there. And amongst other things which have been mentioned there, specifically as the focus areas, we're talking about three focus areas which have been identified. The aggressive infrastructure investment, that is job creation, but it must be planned and not haphazard. It doesn't mean that if you make an announcement today, tomorrow you'll see the graders. The issues of financing that infrastructure. Sometimes how do we talk about the PPPs? And remember, there are different PPPs. There are PPPs and PPPEs. There are those who want to take all the risks to government. And we have to deal with those issues. The second focus area was employment-oriented strategic localization, the reindustrialization and export promotion. But we also talk about enabling conditions and supportive environment. On the infrastructure, we're very clear. This talk about the rail, the ports, the road infrastructure, the communication infrastructure, including the release of the spectrum and the broadband, the water security, the social infrastructure, including housing, schools, and other facilities. And on the employment of oriented strategic localization and reindustrialization and the export promotion, we're talking mining, how to expand mining, how do we revitalize manufacturing in the light of the changed global conditions? How do we defend and rejuvenate tourism, hospitality industry, leisure and entertainment? By the way, this is one of the biggest areas. You are correct, Honorable Inan. This is one of the biggest areas where in some of the restaurants, 100% of the staff are foreign nationals. How does it happen? We don't know. And you find that those are the people who are dropped midnight to look for their own transport after working at the restaurant. No arrangement whatsoever. People not paying, not responding or respecting the legislation in this particular country. Basic conditions of employment, everything is not respected. These are the areas we have to deal with. We also, one area on the employment, we're talking about growing the digital economy. We were talking about agriculture and agro-processing. We're talking green economy. These are all the plans. And we talked about these conditions for supporting policy environment by strengthening employment and empowerment-related policies and legislation. When Honorable Bakram is talking about the regulatory environment which is constraining, it's because some of the people do not want to open up when it comes to the issues of empowerment, do not want to open up on a number of issues which are related to labor legislation. Say our legislative environment is very constraining. And there are different studies on this particular matter, which are saying different things. So we have a choice as a country to follow what we have debated as social partners. But what we will not do is to run away from our responsibility to protect our citizens in the country, be it at home or even in the workplace. Well, on the mass public employment programs, we've been talking about the community infrastructure. We've been talking about the environment, the healthcare, education, and ECD support. I know that we have not said this. You see, seated with the millions of South Africans and the unemployment seated almost 30% and above, there is no way that we cannot have a government intervening. I know that there are those who are anti-government intervention in the various areas. There is no way that at this stage of our economic development, we can run away from the responsibility as a government to provide a lot of public goods. We are creating environment about that. Who trains the doctors is the state. And where do they go after that? They go to the private practice. That's the environment. Part of that is to protect the nation, is also to protect the workers. No private company will just train doctors. Instead, they will expect government to do that particular training. We are creating the environment. Who is to subsidize the technology development? Even the so-called structural economists or economics, they recognize that the importance of state intervention in a number of areas, because the private sector is not going to be interested in the production of the public goods, including the skills training, massive skills training. And fortunately, in South Africa, we've been able to discuss and come with the sitters, and the private sector came on board. So this issue of collective working together is very, very important. I mean, we have successes in countries where there was state intervention in a lot of areas. You talk Japan, you talk Korea, you talk China, you talk Southeast Asia countries. We have successes there. So I was just trying to say, Honorable Inanna, we do have a document. The other issue is, I've already indicated that on the recommendations of METLEC, there are areas where we agree with business, there are areas where we agree with labor, with the community, but there are areas where we disagree. But we don't abandon, we say, let's continue discussing. Honorable Cardo. Oh yes, the issue of the permits. By the way, the IMC which deals with this labor migration policy is also having the Minister of Home Affairs. We are facilitating together this particular IMC. And some of the issues also talk to the issues of Home Affairs. That's why Minister Mtsoaledi, I think, recently has made an announcement. I think it was in Portfolio Committee of Home Affairs. He has made an announcement that he has put up a task team to quickly relook at the permit system of the different categories. Honorable Caldo, you talked about the labor migration. Are we going to introduce the quotas? I don't want to preempt that particular debate. We are looking at the different options, including the quotas. But we won't come up with a one-size-fits-all strategy. We will have to look at each and every sector. But what is very clear, it can't be, and I mean this, on low-level skills areas, you take all foreigners or all foreign nationals at the expense of the South Africans and disrespecting the labor laws. We know where it's happening in the security industry, which is very sensitive, in the hospitality industry, the restaurants and the hotels. We know where it's happening in farming. We know even in the retail, many of the big stores, retail stores, are starting to do this now. These are the areas which we think we have to talk about. But it can't be a one-size-fits-all. But on the employment also, I just want to say, we are focusing on the African economic migration. You know the agreement which Minister Patel has been talking about, of the AFTA. But also as we deal with this issue of the labor migration, and Honorable Ngobo talks about this, that we're disseminated, and as we try to deal with this matter of labor migration, we must take care. I think Honorable Ngobo is a very important, but we must take a constructive and a balanced approach. We want to access the African market, this billion people in the market, our own businesses in the private sector. But there is a constitution which has the Bill of Rights to protect everyone who lives in South Africa. Not only South African citizens, everyone who lives in South Africa, they have the rights. And as we deal with that matter, the constitution should guide us. The international conventions which we are part of, be it at the UN and other international agencies or ILO, are also binding to us. Even our own laws, labor legislation. So we have this rights culture. How you deal with the foreign nationals, you have to take into consideration all those. But that does not mean we should not be able to give priority when you're faced with this massive unemployment, especially at the low skills level. Why do we import people from outside when you have millions of South Africans who can be able to open? Other countries have done that in the same continent. I thought that I was saying that even this issue of the agro-processing, agriculture and agro-processing, a big, big, big issue in the action plan, Honorable Inan. So if you go and read that document, it will be very helpful. The sustainability of the UIF with the extension of TERS. I'm confused, Honorable Carter. Because I had your own party calling for the extension of the UIF, talking vociferously about this particular matter. But when you're talking about the sustainability, I thought that was going to be the first question which we're trying to answer in Parliament. But I think Masha or even the DG would be able to tell you about the compromises which we have made. And what have we decided to do? It was not an easy thing. It was a very difficult thing. But all that can comfort us or comfort the members, the sectors now have been narrowed. There are sectors who never opened since the lockdown last year and up to now. They were given a breather only starting from last week when the president made an announcement. And so the sectors are there, but they are not that many. Maybe the DG would be able to talk about those particular sectors. But also remember that an area we don't normally talk about, there are workers in the various sports federations who are paid through the gate takings, which has never been allowed, which means those workers have never been able to earn. So there's talk now about the arts workers in the theaters and so on and so on. So there are, although there are few sectors which have not been able to operate. I will leave the other issues to the DG, including the issue of the inspectors, because we might be talking about a process not separating the financial years. But the DG would be able to give the details and even correct me if I've captured other things incorrectly. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Minister. Minister, you are then excused. DG, thank you very much, Minister.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you, Honourable Members. The DG and PM, they are there.
Yes, you are then excused as you have requested. Thank you. DG?
Thank you, Slalo, and the Honourable Members. If you agree, Chairperson, I have the DDGs for all these portfolios here. If I can ask them to take their areas, we'll start with the inspection and enforcement services.
Okay.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, DG, and greetings, Honourable Members, and the Deputy Minister and colleagues. I'm going to talk to the issue of the 500 inspections. These were advertised in 2019 with a closing date. Let me just see. With a closing date of the 4th of December in 2019. So, beginning of 2020, particularly the first 4 months, those were used for recruitment and selection. So, I think the last bit of the inspectors was brought in and around October 2020. So, we are sitting right now at 100%. Of the recruitment of those inspectors. And Chair, just also to point out that it doesn't happen that inspectors will be newly recruited unless they had been in the system, that they will be newly recruited and be ready to run. So we brought in also a training program, which is valid for about 3 to 6 months, depending on the nature of needs per area. And obviously pay inspector, because some of them would be fresh from school, particularly at the entry level. And then also building an element of coaching and mentoring. So by the time they are ready to run, it does take a bit of time. And that is why probably the minister was talking about how this footprint is going to assist the inspectorate in the context that I've already painted, that they would have gone through the recruitment and selection and a training program. So by the time we start to see real results, it takes normally a period of 6 to 12 months. Because even when they start to go to workplaces, most of the time they would have mentors and coaches that will accompany them until they're ready to go on their own. So that is just in response to what was raised by Honorable Bagrin. In terms of what was raised by Honorable Mkonto, our inspectors do not have jurisdiction in the mining sector. And hence you'll see that we don't cover it at all. The Department of Minerals and Energy has got their own inspectors that do mining. So we don't have jurisdiction with regards to occupational health and safety. And then I'm going to look at what Honorable Mdabe has raised. And Chair, I might have missed a few points because it was difficult to hear some of the parts of what he was saying. But I think I picked two things. The first one, what is the impact of non-compliance? To the CCMA and the department, given the fact that there hadn't been, there were a reduced number of inspectors that went out during the COVID period. So the most obvious impact would be, because non-compliance is a function of and an outcome of an inspection and also advocacy. So our inspections are preceded by advocacy, and then inspections itself before we can start talking non-compliance. And obviously the fact that our inspectors, particularly BCA and all the others, had not had an opportunity to go out and conduct inspections. Just to give you an example, as at the third quarter, that is end of December, in the BCA space, we're only able to do around 87,000 inspections. And that 87,000, if you were to compare it to the previous year, we had managed to do it by the second semester. So in this regard, at the third quarter, you can see we had a poorer showing in terms of the numbers. So the compliance or non-compliance in the labor market space would be affected by the fact that we would have conducted a lesser number of inspections that normally would have been the case. And also the fact that we also had to reduce our targets given the challenges that the DG spoke about earlier. So I can only talk for the inspectorate. And when it comes to the CCMA, they are a value add with regards to issues of enforcement, exclusively in the BCA and national minimum wage space. We know that the amendments in the BCA have now enabled us to be able to refer instances where erring employers would have not complied with notices that would have been issued. In other words, notices that would have expired. So with regards to an impact study itself, as far as I know, we haven't done the type of a study. Honorable Ndabe also spoke about the fact that in the employment equity space, we only have 9 specialists for the entire country. It's true. And what is it that we're doing? The DG did refer to the impact of budget cuts. For us to add heads, real heads, to the employment equity space, we do need money. And in the absence of money, what is it that we have tried to do? Chairperson, what we've tried to do as a stopgap measure to look at how then do we capacitate this area. What we did was to convert 42 BCA inspectors to employment equity. And those that were converted were the type of inspectors that were doing a bit of both. In other words, they were doing both BCA and employment equity. And because we realized that we did not necessarily have specialist posts at an SR8 level for employment equity, we then went through a process where 42 of those inspectors were then added to the tally. So as things stand now, all in all, it's 51 inspectors that we have in the employment equity space, but only 9 of those are specialists in that regard. DG Chair, I'll end there. I think those were the questions that affect IES. Thanks.
May I ask Virgil Sifield to talk to CCMA matters?
Sorry for that. Yes, he may.
Okay, thanks, Chair. Mr. Sifield? Still want to look for him, Chair. May I ask Mr. Fem Rotoba to talk on labor market, on public employment services issues?
Good morning, Honorable Chairperson and members. Deputy Minister DG. I think DJ, the first one on the labor migration, the minister extensively covered that issue. And as soon as we are ready and we have gone through the necessary cabinet approvals, we will definitely also come to the portfolio committee on two things, the labor migration policy, and linked to the labor migration policy will be the amendments to the current Employment Services Act that we would want the labor, the portfolio committee on labor to assist us in processing, because even if we have a policy, if we don't have the legislative arm to enforce the policy, that policy will remain meaningless. So immediately after cabinet approval, we'll go to NEDLAC and hopefully once we have discussed with NEDLAC, we'll get that approval. But I think we'll also stress the importance of also involving the Portfolio Committee on Home Affairs, because this matter straddle across the two departments. And even in the current amendments, what is still holding us is to make sure that there's cross-referencing, but also identifying some of the aspects that were in the Immigration Act that were labor market related, that needs to be relocated so that we can smoothen this process. The other question, DG, related to the 11 billion rand, yes, it is not in the budget that the DG has presented on the pathways. There are still discussions with the Treasury, Jobs Fund, the Presidency, and so on. And once all those processes are finalized and we receive an allocation, including how the different departments are going to access the funding, we'll make an amendment to our APP and come back to the Portfolio Committee on Labor with details with regards to that issue. I think that there was another question on the increase in the number of people with disabilities. Yes, I think the employment equity and the interventions that we are trying to do with the supported employment enterprises, the designated groups, subsidies, these are but some of the contributions that we are making, including other interventions that are being made broadly by government and the private sector to make sure that we increase the pool of people with disabilities in the labor market, and that they are not wholly dependent on SASSA for grants. The other point was related to the supported employment enterprises, that we received a budget cut of 6 million, and we've also reduced the marketing budget, but we want to reach the 5% in terms of turnover. Yes, it is going to be an uphill battle. We had to cut the SEE budget like all others as directed. And I think what is also important for honorable members to note is that the SEE operates on the basis of half the allocation coming from the grant. But to sustain run operations, buy materials and all that, you depend on massive sales that we must generate. And that is why our budget is almost double, and the other half is because it's generated from those sales. It is going to be a tough battle. We will rely on the agreements that we are going to negotiate with government departments. We are also looking at the amendments to the current procurement bill, because if there's ring fencing, that will assist us. We are also reverting to other marketing interventions that require less advertising, like engaging various district government departments that are relevant, like education, health, and so on, to procure from SEE as opposed to the big marketing interventions that we had, advertising at airports and so on. Because after the evaluation, we realized that we're spending money, but the returns were very little. So we will do our best within the reduced constraints and see to the extent which we can correct it. DJ, I think I covered issues that were.
Okay, thanks, Chair. I see Mr. Sifield is back now. Can I ask him to talk to the CCMA issues?
Yes.
Mr. Virgil Sifield.
Thank you, DJ. Thank you, Chair. Chair and honourable members, the reality of the situation is that across government the budget cuts have been effected, and therefore what it implies is that we need to apply the resources that we have in an as effective as possible manner, so that all of the functions in the department are conducted in a manner that it derives the kind of legislative mandate that we have, but also in relationship to the functioning of the organization. So that's the one overriding principle, that no government department has been spared the cuts on budget as well. So that's the reality, and that's the underlying principle that in applying the resources that we have, that the department applied, so that all of the functions and the core functions in the department, as well as administration and the function, because therefore it does support the core functions within the department, is adequately resourced within the limited resource constraints that we have. So that's the underlying principle. The second thing is in relationship to how then will it affect the functioning of the CCMA, and that is very clear, honourable members and Chair, is that the effect in essence would be systemic. In essence, it would be systemic in the sense that all of the functions of the CCMA will be affected. All of the functions within all of the departments essentially that we have, all of the line function departments that we have, will be systemic. It will have an effect on the number of cases we're going to have to deal with. It will have effect on dispute prevention processes, because these more often than not require the resources that we have. It will also affect the resource application that we have with respect to human resources, and by consequence of the budget cuts, honourable members, it will have an effect on the CCMA. Is it then detrimental to the functioning of the CCMA? To the extent that the budget cuts will affect the systemic functioning, yes, it is. But to the extent that are there any other precautionary measures or other measures that we can put in place to address it? Unfortunately, not. The reality is that we can't spare the CCMA as with any other organization. The cut that we have, you would have noticed from the budget that the DG has presented across the different core functions of the department, that each and every aspect of the department has been affected. DG, to some extent, I think that has addressed all of the concerns that has been raised, and therefore I think I have addressed the concerns raised by the honourable member. Thank you, Chair.
Chair, there was a question about the appointment of a senior manager at CCMA instead of redirecting that money to appoint more part-time commissioners.
Did she, and honourable members and honourable chair, the reality is that that firstly that in order to stabilise the CCMA and bring some degree of stability and certainty, there are some trade-offs that you have to make, and one of these is that we have the core managerial functions within the department ready and able to respond to the questions that we have. So it is important that we fulfill and satisfy that requirement as well. Whether that impacts on the part-time commissioners, the majority of the functions, because of the remuneration structure of the CCMA and the way that it is that more part-time commissioners will be used because it gets rid of the underlying costs that you would have paid for part-time commissioners, full-time commissioners, appointing full-time commissioners would have. And therefore, Chair, as long as it brings stability to the organization, as long as it provides the kind of certainty that we have, it is important that we do so in a manner that strengthens the organization, both internally but also in relationship to the line functions of that specific organization. Chair, I think, and DJ, I think I've addressed that question.
Sorry, DJ. What I'm doing, I think it's a... I am uncomfortable. I nearly jumped on top of my table when Mr. Sheffield had a big no on what then is to be done in terms of the challenges that are facing CCMA, with the understanding that where there are cuts, but I would have thought that we must, as we are seated here, the plight of our people. We are not raising this thing about CCMA because we want CCMA to be given money, but it is because of the importance and the centrality of CCMA in the employment labor department and space, and therefore, and I'm not expecting him to respond now. I am giving this to the leadership, the minister, the DM, and yourselves. Please, good people, when you respond in such a way that it gives us hope that you are also concerned. You know that this is what we are given, and so there's nothing that we can do. No, it can't be. Yes, we have got the responsibility as the portfolio committee of ensuring that in our budget vote, we reflect on this. We will do other things, but it can't be that because it has been cut, and therefore, and then that no, for me, makes me a bit uncomfortable. Uncomfortable because ordinary people outside are really going to be in. I must not get a sense, DG and Deputy Minister, that because ourselves, you know, that we'll never be subjected to the CCMA processes. I may be a bit harsh here, but I may be a bit emotional, and I am not apologetic by being emotional. It's because of the plight of the people that I'm thinking of. So please, and I'm not expecting a response for now at DM on this thing. We will do our best, but I would have expected a more sympathetic and not a straight administrative question. Thank you. Can somebody come in? Who was going to follow Mr. Sifield? TG?
Thank you, Chair. I'm going to ask the UIF Commissioner, acting, to just talk about the UIF-related matters. Thanks.
Thank you. Thank you, and good morning, everybody. Thank you. The question I have to respond to is twofold. Firstly, is the issue of whether the UIF still has enough resources. And then the second one are the sectors which are targeted by phase two. So let me start with the issue of the sectors targeted. In the presentation that was circulated, the last two slides, takes comprehensive care of 23 sectors plus 24th, which says which will allow the UIF to make a decision on the on whether it is part of the value chain of the other sectors when someone applies or when an employer applies for extended TERS benefits. Allow me to speak to the resources of the fund. As at the 1st of April 2020, the fund had resources of 150.7 billion rand. This has decreased by the end of December, by the 31st of December, which is the last time that we have the full statements for, to 90.5 billion, which means we had a decrease of just under 60 billion rand in our assets. And this is as a result of the withdrawals we had to make to fund the COVID dash. Now, at this stage, the UIF has enough resources and enough assets to pay in the increase of or the projected increase of statutory or ordinary benefits, as well as the extension of this up to the 15th of March. But it is really we should really note that we cannot continue extending this. The UIF's purse pocket is the same as any individuals or organizations. We can't extend and pay more than what we generate in terms of the income. So at this stage, Dr. Cardo, we have enough assets to pay the statutory benefits as well as the extension of the TERS benefit up to the 15th of March this year. Thank you, Chair.
Chair, may I ask the acting COO, Ms. Nolkolo Sutabi, to just wrap up on the question raised by Honorable Dabe about the impact of working from home on service delivery. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, DG. Good morning, Honorable Chairperson and members of the Portfolio Committee. Good morning, Deputy Minister, and good morning, colleagues. This is in response to Honorable Dabe's concerns about the impact of working from home by the officials of the department and whether a study was conducted to actually measure whether service delivery has not been negative. Let me first clarify by saying that working from home for the department is not a paid holiday for our officials. There are performance contracts that have been put in place to safeguard working from home by our officials when the need arises. These contracts are designed to protect our targets and to ensure that officials still meet their obligations. Where officials do not do so, there are still repercussions. I can remember a few cases in some of the provinces where officials have been disciplined because they were wayward, and in some few instances, some officials are currently under suspension and are undergoing some disciplinary measures for not meeting their obligations for working from home. The question about whether there was a study that was conducted to measure the impact of working from home on service delivery. Our monthly and quarterly monitoring reports across the department serve as tools to measure output as well as organizational performance in the department. Indeed, these reports do point out that COVID, post-COVID, has had, in fact, COVID has had an impact on the performance of the department. Our post-COVID reports, they do point out that our performance has taken a knock Indeed, as the South African economy gradually opened towards the end of last year, we began to see the performance of the department picking up. The Dell has countered the lockdown by increasing its capacity in the main to work remotely and for most services to be accessible online. This is work in progress for the department, and it has helped to mitigate the downward trend in performance. Indeed, we are not going to run away from the fact that we do have system challenges. We do have downtime times where our services may not be accessible, but the Dell is working very hard to ensure that we have a 98% system availability at all times. And this is the target that we have put out for ourselves in the current APP. The DDGIES has spoken about the IES recovery plans that are in place, which are stringently monitored across all the provinces in order to improve performance. And indeed, we have seen, according to the monthly reports as well as quarterly reports, that there have been some improvement in performance in IES and, in fact, across all the programs of the department. Yes, we are still struggling from the after effects of the hard lockdown. Our performance will take time to go to pre-COVID levels. This is a government-wide problem which is not only exclusive to the Department of Employment and Labor. But with the return to some form of normalcy, we should see some full recovery by the department. The inoculation drive by the country against the virus presents new hope for the country that soon we will be able to go back to normal, and we should be in a position to discharge our responsibilities without any hindrance. That is my response, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. Once more, let me just say we do not have a 100% work from home policy as a department. It is necessitated by when we have to observe the regulations that come from our government, that we must observe 75% work capacity in order to prevent transmission. And it is during these times then that we do invoke the work from home policy so that we have some staff coming in on a rotational basis. But we can also assure honorable members that we have our labor centers manned even during hard lockdown times, because we don't operate at 0% capacity. We operate, if there is a need, at 50% capacity and at 75% capacity. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Ms. Gaba. Did you?
Chair, there's one question that Mr. Sifu did not respond to, which was talking to the impact of online service introduced by the CCMA impact to those that are vulnerable and cannot afford the technology. I think that all of us, even the services of the department, there are services that when we deliver them, we'll have to strike that balance, between the realization of the fact that there are those who can afford and there are those who cannot afford the technology, and therefore open, cautiously open offices so that those who cannot afford may come in. And we've had a discussion with the CCMA as far as this matter is concerned. So in their plans, Chair, I can assure you that they are considered, and there's much thought about ensuring that even the vulnerable ones who cannot afford the technology are catered for. There's also a question that I think the Minister responded to it slightly about the minimum wage that is crippling the farming sector. We issued out a statement to this regard, Chair, where we're highlighting the process that was followed to reach the agreement to increase the minimum wage in the farming sector by 3 rands. I think it's important to mention the absolute number, an absolute figure, because when people use percentage terms, it creates an impression that a serious anomaly has been created here by the increase of the national minimum wage. So the equalization, as was the presentation made by the chairperson of the committee to the portfolio committee, had to happen because there was an agreement again at NEDLAC, and that needed to be honored. And I think this is a matter that was raised by Honorable Pagrin, that some of the agreements at NEDLAC are not honored. And so we had to honor this agreement to equalize by 3 rands. And for the life of me, I find it very strange that there's so much noise about this 3 rand increase. You know, because our experience shows that the compliance level in the farming sector, as far as national minimum wage is concerned, it is not bad at all. So, which means that the farm owners, they can afford the minimum wage, and that's precisely one of the factors that are taken into consideration when you increase the minimum. When you looking at whether you should increase the minimum wage, you look at the affordability of the sector. Of course, that is on average terms. So I thought, let me just clarify that the intention is never to cripple the farming sector, because it's a very important sector in terms of food production and also creating employment and sustaining employment, by the way. Thank you, Chair. I'll leave it at that. Chairperson?
Okay. Thank you, DGDM. Is DM around?
Ikona DM, Chairperson, Dilapha. Ufuna ndingene ngoku chair. Sorry?
Yes,
my network is
there. Yes. Yes, dear.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members. I think I don't have much to say, because I think the Minister was too detailed, including the DG. But just safe to say, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members, I think just to say something about CCMA, I think we all are aware now that quite a chunk of our labor force in South Africa falls under the jurisdiction of the CCMA, and a very few forces in our courts. And I think it's very unfortunate, Honorable Chairperson, more often than not, that when we do resource allocation, sometimes it does not necessarily match due to issues of resources. We have to stretch here and there. But the issue also of the cuts that we are actually forced to do, and I think you would agree that at some point we need to find a way. And I think we have to, as a department, we have to ask yourself, your good self, as a committee members, to also help us to lobby, if it is the right way to talk. This one, especially which affects the
it puts workers in a vulnerable position, and the situation does not help us in any way. So at some point, we'll need to have to lobby the relevant departments to say, and even ourselves, I think the DG also spoke about the fact that we will also have to look within our own departments as we do the cuts, to what extent, because remember, the work that is done by the CCMA is very important, not only the CCMA, but all the other units within the department, their work that they are doing is very important, but the responsibility, the huge responsibility actually that is for CCMA or on CCMA needs to be looked in another way to make sure that we are not necessarily biased towards them, but we make sure that when we do the cuts, they don't get necessarily affected in the manner in which they are affected. I'm sure you are aware that they had to dump some of their programs that were supposed to be for outreach, and it affected them seriously. So I think we need to agree that at some point we need to have a session where we discuss the importance of all of our entities within the department itself. But over and above that, I think the minister has spoken at length on the issue of the minimum wage, and I'm not going to touch on those things. The issues of the vacancy rate in our department, and I think a lot has been said, and I don't want to spoil what has been said already. And with those two, Chair, I want to pause there and thank you for giving me this opportunity to say something.
Thank you very much, GM. There's a question that was asked by Honourable Baker on the, I'm not quite sure this was a question or a comment, but it's something that I think the response on that, in my view, needs to be relooked, and the department submit that to the member and the committee in writing. The issue of employing somebody on huge costs instead of that money being used to employ, I'm just making an example, two or three people is was not satisfactory. And I will humbly request at the MNDG that if the department, through its official and official in a particular space, one is not quite sure or is not ready or empowered enough to respond, feel free to say that, to say that the committee, we are requesting, or I'm requesting to come back, Honorable Chair, so that on this question, because I am not prepared, so that we are able to get a response that is going to be satisfactory. Remember, we are not asking these questions for the sake of asking questions. We are asking these questions because we are on the ground. We are asking these questions because we are on the ground, because our constituency offices are there. Yes, you may not be, you are not all over. You are office bound, that we accept and admit. But understand that there are people like ourselves that are interacting with people. And therefore, again, I want to say a process of presentation and a process of asking questions is not about them and us. It's empowering both sides. It's empowering ourselves. We ask questions, we empower you. You respond, so it's a process of empowerment. And therefore, at times, I really become a DM. I really become a bit worried and concerned. And I may sound to have been agitated when an official of the department respond in a manner that may be bothering in being insensitive. I understand you people are administrators. And therefore, by virtue of being an administrator, there are some, but you can't separate administration. What we're talking about here is politics and ideology. In terms of class, race, and gender, of what is happening on the ground, we will always be influenced by that. That you must understand. So it's not just pure administration, no. So I think on behalf of the committee, I felt that I've got that responsibility. We're coming from different political parties. We've got different views and positions. We've got different manifestos. But in the center is that, how then do we bring all that together? Because we are to work together. We're not enemies here. We are not in competition here. But how then do we ensure that all these different views, we put them under one pot and we melt them so that they come out being well molded, not for ourselves, but for the ordinary people of this country. So please. Please, I must not. I was once a worker, and being subjected to a number of things, and all of us for that matter in different ways, in one way or another, and understand DM and DG. Your staff must understand and be live to the fact that majority of these members here, we are well versed with the space of labor. Mr. Bagram has got his own expertise. Dunja, Nontele, Honorable Ngcobo. We were once shop stewards, Honorable Nkabane, Honorable Ponana, Honorable Inana. We were workers. We were not asking things for the sake of asking them. So please make us, and I don't think we have energy of always being of throwing our toys. We will throw our toys on the floor if a need arises. But please come across to us as people that are sensitive to the plight. Maybe you are, but it's on how you respond. And really, some of you respond like typical managers in an office. You know, DM, I have been called by some of the people that I don't know from Adam and Eve, on how, and I escalated that to the DG and the PLO. A person, Masha, that called your call center, he has written an email illustrating, you know, that I called with this one. But he said, when I called him, he said something very profound. That, you know, when they answer phones, you hear them talking, it's nice, laughing, but they also talk in a language that they think I don't understand. Because I'm Xhosa, they think that I don't understand Pedi and Swana. And when they respond, they complain to one another that, oh, this one is making things difficult. He's full of nonsense. In a call center, DG, that is completely unacceptable. I'm bringing that in because I want to show to you how sensitive we are when workers are not handled properly. Because those workers are not just doing that. Some of them may be opportunistic, were able to pick that, but some of them are raising their plight with sore hearts, heavy hearts. But it's worse when then they are not assisted. So Masha, that call center of UIF, please, I hope I'm not going to receive any complaint, whether from a province or for where, they stop bugs with you. But not only with you, with the DG, but not only with the DG, with the minister. I'm one chair, therefore. I'm one of those chairs that I don't mix my words when workers are not handled. That is why I'm able to tell somebody who is calling and complaining and say, I say, don't take chances with me, please. Put your issue so that we're able to understand. Give us your, if a person doesn't want to give me his or her phone number so that she is being called, I then said, oh, this one is taking chances. So please, Ms. Matsha, unfortunately I can't pronounce your surname. No, thank you very much. We will
Chairperson. Honorable Chair, before you close, I think I just want to put it on record that should there have been any questions that might not have been responded to, I think DG and the DGGs who are around should have recorded such, and we will be able to come back to the portfolio committee to give feedback on either the responses that might have been unsatisfactory. And we want to take also this opportunity to apologize should there have been some misunderstanding on some responses from the DGs or officials who were presenting on what they were supposed to have said. I want to, at this point in time, Honorable Chairperson and members, that we apologize profusely for either such a misunderstanding. And I don't think it was intentional, and we would want to apologize so that it should be put to rest. Thank you, Chair.
No, apology accepted, GM, but those responses must not wait for, yes, you'll respond to them in the portfolio committee at some point, but those must be forwarded to the secretariat, and the secretariat will forward them to the relevant members. I agree, we'll table them or respond to them during portfolio committee, but please let them not wait until that time. We will sub. At talking with the, in fact, I'll interact with the secretariat to see when should we, because remember that we had a workshop, we must have that report and table it in the committee for acceptance, but also the what is this? The oversight that we conducted last Friday at ArcelorMittal, we will do that so that that oversight is ATC and be tabled to the House. I am informed by the Secretariat through Mr. Sakaza that today at 4:30 is the last day for the presentation of the submissions. Yes, they have increased COIDA, it's about 80 something. And employment equity, it's still low, but there's nothing that we can do about that. They know what to do, and they will then come back to the office of the chair on then how then do we take the processes forward. The last one, honorable members, is that we are to have a joint portfolio committee with agriculture. If you remember, there was a motion that was tabled by EFF to Honorable Matiase, which then there was a counter motion from the African National Congress on the same motion, which was tabled and accepted in the House. And then there was then a resolution that was taken by the House that joined these committees must sit and table to the House by November on what is that is to be done. There are a number of things that we have to do, but I just want to make members, just to remind members that we have still got that work. So when you see that invitation to of a joint committee with agriculture, members must then understand that it is within that context of that resolution that was taken. Having said that, members, thank you very much. When we have guests that are not prepared to introduce themselves, I will not be blamed of what action I will take. Because I'm not taking it kind that there are people who don't want to introduce themselves here. Whoever, whether from media or from PMG, or now I see names that I don't know here. And the next thing I am to respond from issues that people have perceptions on what on the issue that has been raised. But having said that, thank you very much, members, until we meet again.
Thank you, Chair. It's been a delightful meeting. Greatly appreciated.
Ah. Thank you.